On Monday, January 11th, we got a little bit of a mailbag show, but also plenty to talk about from the fantasy baseball world. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today. Adam Azer, Scott White, Al Melchior. Coming at you on a Monday morning here, so I hope everybody had a great weekend. Let's get to the show. I don't think we talked much about Aroldis Chapman, the three of us. Am I wrong? We kind of skipped over it, right?
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong.
Okay, good. Well, that means I'm right. You can just say I'm right.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. It was double negative.
Yeah, but
positive.
I'd feel better if you just next time just say you were right. It would help me out here. Aroldis Chapman, is he going to be your number one closer? Let's assume he is not suspended. That's our hot topic.
All right, well, first of all, I got to ask you a question. Would you be asking us this question if he were still a Red?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, see, this is the most Yankee fan question ever.
Well, I just know that the Yankees are going to win more games than the Reds. I think they are. And you know, the only thing that really holds Chapman back is save opportunities. So we saw Miller could have been number one if he had stayed healthy. Why not Chapman if he's the guy? Al, wait a second. First, Al would not go so far as to say I was right. He had to say I wasn't wrong. And now he's calling me out for being a homer. What is happening right now, Al Melchior?
Happy Monday.
Well, he woke up on the wrong side of the bed.
Yes.
Maybe. You know, I had Andrew Miller as the number two closer before he got upstaged here by Mr. Chapman. I have Chapman third. And no, wait, I think I have him second. I'm not sure what I have him. Hang on.
I can look it up for you.
Yeah. I'm not sure where he went once I moved Miller out, which is makes for great
buying. And while you both are looking at that, I didn't make any changes to Chapman or Miller because I'm waiting to see how this all shakes out with the possible suspension, with Miller, I think, very likely getting traded somewhere where he could get saves, or maybe just getting the job at the beginning of the year and maybe keeping it. So I'm holding fast with these guys until I know more.
Yeah, I've heard the Miller potentially getting traded rumors. I just don't understand why they put together a package of prospects to get Chapman and then trade Miller for a package. Like it just seems like what are you doing? You're chasing your tail, you know? Like I could understand building this dominant bullpen since that's worked so well for the Royals the last couple of years. And because the Yankees don't really have a lights out starting rotation, a lot of question marks there that they'd prefer to win games late. That seems to be the trend among the teams that can afford it, to stack your bullpen with three dominant relievers.
All right, so right now Al has Chapman fifth and Scott has Chapman third. So I'm going to tell you that Aroldis Chapman is not suspended and the Yankees are saying he's the closer at least to start the season. Where are you finishing your ranking with Aroldis Chapman?
I'm kind of inclined to leave him where he is. I could change my mind and move him to number one. To me, Jansen, Kimbrel, Chapman, it's, you know, roll three-sided die. And you really can't go wrong with any of them. They're going to put up comparable numbers. Wade Davis, you could maybe put in that group also.
I did.
Yeah. So,
Yes, I moved Chapman up to fourth because then he leapfrogged Miller, who I'd drop. Well, yeah, if he's a setup guy, I'm probably dropping him down into the teens. I'm still keeping him, you know, up in the rankings there on the chance that he gets traded. And if nothing else, he's going to put up great, you know, great ratios as a setup guy.
All right. So that you're talking about Andrew Miller. I want to share a text message exchange from last night.
Really?
So I was texting Scott about what we were going to talk about on today's show, and I said definitely some emails. Alex Gordon re-signed, the Storen trade, American League regression alert that Heath Cummings wrote, and I said, oh yeah, Denard Span too. And that was pretty much the end of the conversation. Scott didn't even say, like, okay. I'm starting to really feel, like, hated on this podcast. Scott didn't respond. He just kind of let it go. Until a few hours later, Scott replies to me out of nowhere, quote, just put him down. He had a big poop. And then the next text was, whoops, sure you wanted to hear all about that. So what happened there,
you
Scott?
See,
this is what happens when you accidentally send a text.
I'm pretty sure my old phone, if somebody, you know, if I was already in a text conversation with somebody else and then somebody else texts me and I go to reply, I'm in the conversation with the person who just texted me. But apparently my new phone, it defaults to the person I last texted, which was you, Adam. So I was responding to my wife about my baby boy, and about, you know, here's the thing, Adam. You don't realize this yet, but when you have a child, an unreasonable number of your conversations become about poop. I would say at least a third of all your conversations are about baby defecation. So just get used to that. You know, get comfortable with that idea, because you don't realize it now, but it's going to happen. This is a glimpse into what fatherhood is like.
Can't wait, Scott. That's good stuff. Thank you for letting me share that in the air. I got a nice kick out of it yesterday.
Yeah.
Let's read an email. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We'll try to get to more a little bit later, but here's our email of the day. It's from Tim in Toronto, Ontario. How come you aren't willing to give Carlos Gomez a pass for 2015? Yeah, I know his stats were brutal last year. They ruined my season, but I also heard he was dealing with a hip injury, which sapped his power and speed. In 2014 and 15 drafts, he was a top 10 overall player, for Pete's sake. In your most recent mock draft, Alan Scott felt that Carlos Gomez was terrible value in the sixth round, which I disagree with. So, yeah, you know, it's not a bad point from Tim. We know he had a hip problem because the Mets didn't want to take him after they had initially traded for him. He did a little bit better at the end of the year. He hit .325 with four home runs and four steals in August. He hit two home runs in the playoffs in like six or seven games, 4-for-15 with two home runs. Anyway, Carlos Gomez, are you guys being a little too harsh on the man?
Maybe. I mean, there comes a point with every player where you just kind of have to pick a narrative, you know, whether it's statistics based or otherwise, you just kind of have to pick one and stick with it. I think I am inclined to not give him the benefit of the doubt because I'm not particularly fond of his skill set to begin with. That very undisciplined, very aggressive hitter, in his prime, you can expect him to put up stud numbers, but whether or not how much the injury bothered him last year, how much it affected his performance, how much of it is just going to be par for the course because he's reached a stage in his career where he's always going to be banged up like that, and how much of it was the start of a decline at age 30, which for, you know, a guy who's so much about raw athleticism, that's starting to get pretty old. I think there's enough red flags there that for a guy whose skill set I didn't love anyway, I'm not going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
I'm pretty much on board with that too. I do think there's some chance that maybe he does restore that value that Tim was talking about, where he was a top 10 overall player. But I just, the decline last year was pretty abrupt and pretty dramatic. And maybe it is entirely health related, but if you compare him to, for example, Denard Span, who I think there's a chance we might talk about him more later.
Oh, we will.
Yeah. who was all kinds of banged up last year and didn't play much, but when he played was really productive. So that performance allows me to sort of hedge my bets a little bit more with Span and say, yeah, maybe he's not fully healthy, but at least I know that the banged up version of him can still produce. With Gomez, I don't know. And it was the same conundrum with Ryan Braun a year ago, you know, where we had a narrative of, you know, okay, well, it's the thumb. And now that the thumb is better, he's going to be back to who he was. Wasn't quite all the way, but he certainly was much improved, Braun. But going into last year, I was really conservative on him because I didn't know if it was the thumb or something else.
And another thing, to get back to the Span comparison, Span went in round 18, where you can afford to completely whiff on a pig versus round 6, where you know, maybe you can survive it, but obviously that's...
Oh,
that's
no, that's it. That, round six, you can easily survive. You get a guy with the upside.
It's much worse, though.
Well,
it is, look, but look at the outfielders who went around Gomes.
That is the next
six.
Thing I was going to bring.
Ryan Braun was the one who went right before him, who had a good year. He has some injury concerns, too, coming off back surgery, but it didn't impact his performance last year nearly as much as it seemed to Gomez's impacted his. And then right after Gomez was Starling Marte, who really has no concerns at all.
Well,
so why just take the risk at that point?
I don't think it's okay, because first of all, Ryan Braun is a case for Carlos Gomez. Like you kind of said it, Al. Like what Ryan Braun did last year should give you hope for Carlos Gomez. And I think, you know, we know what the banged up version of Carlos Gomez is, because the guy has been banged up a lot. Like even when in the last, I would say, 2014, like he was playing hurt and he still was putting up numbers.
So then what happened last year? You're
he
kind
was
of
really banged up. I mean,
argument.
not all injuries are created equal. He had a serious injury last year. And I don't know how you can say you don't like his skill set just because he doesn't make, you know, he strikes out a lot. The skill set, he's a 23-35 steal guy, you know, 23 home run, 35 steal guy. That's a pretty impressive skill set.
I don't like bad play discipline. You know this about me, Adam.
I know, but some guys are exceptions to the rule. Like, you don't hold it against Adam Jones, do you?
I think guys with bad play discipline tend to age poorly. And
he's not that old. He's 30.
30's starting to get up there.
For an outfielder, 30 is not up there. 30's nothing for an outfielder.
It's starting. It's entering the danger zone. I used to consider, you know, 10, 15 years ago, a player's prime to be like 27 through 32. Just, you know, all positions being equal. 27 to 32, that's a player's prime. Now I see it as more like 25 to 30. So Gomez is exiting it if you subscribe to that range like I do.
Yeah, but how many outfielders that you're talking, like, how many outfielders are you drafting ahead of Carlos Gomez that are older than Carlos Gomez? I bet there are at least 10.
Right, but it's the, they're all, the ones who are older than him who I'm drafting before him are all coming off monster seasons, like Jose Bautista and Nelson Cruz.
Yeah, I understand
Chris
that.
Davis,
I'm not,
older than 30,
I'm not blaming
maybe.
You for drafting those guys ahead of him. I'm just saying I don't think we should hold Carlos Gomez's age against him. He's not old.
It's not just to, well, the main thing I'm holding against him is he had a really unproductive season.
Yeah,
he was not starting caliber in fantasy.
Well, I think the issue here is not that you guys didn't, that you're down on Carlos Gomez, but that you called him a bad value in round six. That's
right.
Tim's email, Tim's issue here. And I kind of agree with Tim. And maybe I didn't really realize it until Tim brought it up. Like it didn't jump out to me as like something to jump in on and correct you on last week. Or correct you, not that you're wrong necessarily, but I think I agree with Tim. I think round six to me feels like a pretty good time to take a chance on Carlos Gomez.
Well, you know, when this time of year when we're making statements about somebody being a good or a bad value relative to the round they go in, I think that's really got to be couched in some context, because maybe once you get into March and there's a lot of ADP data, that means something different. Mm-hmm. But this was really relative to the outfielders that went just before and just after him.
Okay.
So if we as a group, the mock drafters, were much more aggressive about getting outfielders round, there's a scenario there where round six wouldn't have been a bad place to take Gomez.
All right. Well, let's look at the injuries, news, and notes, and you can email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com once a week for now, but I imagine we'll be twice a week pretty soon. February, we'll be here before we know it, and then three times, four times, five times a week as we get ramped up and get ready for the season. Also, please, if you like the show, please go on iTunes, give us a nice comment. That would be appreciated. San Francisco signed Denard Span, 3 years, $31 million. Kansas City re-signed Alex Gordon, 4 years, $72 million. And we could talk about Ben Revere, too, as now he's on the Nationals. And I think when I was doing my research about these three guys, Span, Gordon, and Revere, and mostly the first two, like, Gordon, I don't know what he's going to be this year because he got hurt last year, but he is so overrated to me for fantasy. Like, Span, to me, is a much better fantasy, like, much better fantasy outfielder than Alex Gordon. And Revere isn't, you know, Revere's kind of a specialist, but I never want anything to do with Alex Gordon. That's kind of what I'm saying. And I think Span is like criminally underrated, guys.
Well, and that's Gordon's appeal, is that he doesn't stand out in any one area. So I know that this is a comp that we totally overuse, but, you know, kind of a poor man's Hunter Pence.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's somebody who can, you know, give you value because he could fall in a lot of drafts, and especially after last year, you know, where he missed a lot of time with injury. So I won't disagree with you. I'd probably rather have Span. I hedged there a little bit because with all the injuries that Span had, particularly the core muscle one, that yeah. does concern me a bit for him. I think he's risky, but as Scott also pointed out, at least in our mock, he went very late, and I think that that's probably going to happen a lot.
Gordon's kind of strange because he did not have a very good year in terms of head-to-head points per game. And I say per game because obviously he missed that stretch with a badly strained quadriceps, I think it was. And I don't really like looking at his raw numbers. I'm not sure what he did that was so out of character, because normally he's not so bad. Normally he is about up there with Hunter Pence in head-to-head points per game. So,
really?
Yeah.
Well, here's what I got. 2.47 fantasy points per game last year.
Yeah.
But 2.81 fantasy points per game in 2014.
Big difference.
It is, but 2.81 isn't really that good. Like, Denard Span was over 3. Denard Span was 3. Sorry, lost that in the notes, but I can find yeah. that. But
2.81 is about where Jason Hayward was. So
3.37 Denard right. Span was in 2014.
If you could promise me they're playing the same number of games, I agree with you. But while Alex Gordon's last injury last year was kind of a one-time thing, a dramatic incident on the field yeah. caused it, Span was just having surgeries left and right and never seeming to be fully recovered from them and having to go back on the DL. And I mean, you saw the difference in the amount of money they got this offseason. There's a lot more concern
defense
about
plays
Span
into that
Gordon.
Too, though.
So I don't think it's really that close in terms of where you target them on draft day, even if Span on a per game basis is probably going to be better.
All right. Well, when would you guys want to take Alex Gordon then? If Carlos Gomez is a sixth rounder or his eighth rounder or whatever, like Alex Gordon. See, last year I felt like he was going too high because people are still hung up on his like crazy double season a few years ago. But, you know, this year maybe Gordon falls a lot and you actually get good value for him. But when would you guys look to take Alex Gordon?
He went round 13 in this draft, which sounds about right to refer to what Al was saying earlier. That's like the Randall Grichuk. I'm trying to find other outfielders who went in this range. You know, like Gregory Polanco, Christian Yelich. That range sounds about right to me yep. for Gordon.
Yeah, and I was not even looking at those mock draft results. I was thinking around the 12th round. So that sounds like the wheelhouse to me.
Okay, Al, so where do you put Ben Revere, who was traded for Drew Storen over to the Washington Nationals, in this Span-Gordon discussion? Where's Ben Revere, Al?
He's after both of them and probably targeting him. Well, in a points league, I mean, very late.
If at all, yeah. Points
yeah.
league. Now, yeah. Obviously, Roto is going to be drafted because he's a steel stud.
Yeah, and there, I'm thinking probably mid-teens,
mm-hmm.
15th, okay. 16th round.
I'm kind of a little bummed by this deal because, at least for now, it takes Michael Taylor out of the lineup, and it's not like he was a huge sleeper for me, but a guy with the potential to contribute home runs and stolen bases, I'd like to see him get a chance. I think potentially he could be more valuable in Roto than Revere, though I'm not saying I would have drafted him that way if they just stayed put. Now, Jason Wirth in left field is 37 years old, so there's a good chance Taylor gets his chance anyway. I'm also interested to see if Storen gets his chance to close again with Toronto, because it seems like all speculation right now what they're going to do with their bullpen, whether maybe they move Ari Dickey and put Aaron Sanchez back in the rotation. I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility they try Roberto Osuna in the rotation, who was, of course, their closer last year, and that would certainly open the door for Storen. But there's a chance Storen could just close over Osuna anyway. So that what seemed like a defined bullpen situation in Toronto is now very undefined.
Now, is Storen, Al, I'll ask you first. If Storen is the closer in Toronto, is he a top 10, top 15 closer?
I'm going to say top 15. I'm going to value him very similarly to how I would have valued Ozuna as a closer, or how I do right. currently. So, yeah, right in the top 15, probably the 12 to 15 range.
Yeah, if you look at the final numbers, Storen had a 3.44 ERA and a 1.11 WHIP, which isn't very good. But before the Papelbon trade, he had a 1.73 ERA, and in 2014 he had a 1.12 ERA and a 0.98 WHIP. So, maybe it was a mental thing, but he was really bad. He had a 6.75 ERA after he lost his job as the closer and was moved to a setup role for the Nationals last year. I guess we want to see him back in the closer's role.
How bad was that Jonathan Papelbon trade for the Nationals?
Like, yeah, it was pretty bad.
Couldn't have been any more destructive. And they're still stuck with him, so that's wonderful.
You know, the thing is with Papelbon, it's like I don't see him in either of your top 12 right now, and that's the only thing listed on the website. But Papelbon has had one season in his career with an ERA over 3, and he's still really good. He wasn't great with the Nationals. He had a 3.04 ERA, but it's like his stuff seems to be declining, and every year everybody writes him off, but he still just goes out and gets the job done all the time.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much all the closers in the top 15, you're expecting really low ERAs from them, so it's going to be hard to move him up too high. I have him outside my top 20, I think, though with the Storen trade, he might sneak back into it because it seems pretty clear now they're not going to move him to a team that move him anywhere, but especially not to a team that already has a closer.
Right. All right, guys. Couple more notes. St. Louis signed a relief pitcher, Sungwan Oh. I hope I pronounced that right. He's Korean. He should be a setup man. And Don Mattingly and Barry Bonds feel that they can make Marcell Ozuna into a 30-30 guy, according to the Boston Globe. The Boston Globe saying that teams are interested, but they're getting some pushback on Ozuna because Mattingly and Bonds feel like they can mold this lump of clay, Al, into something very special. I was really high on Ozuna. Al, I don't think you were at all last year. You were kind of like, chill out, bro. I should have listened to you.
I don't remember that at all. I remember actually being, maybe it's just relative to Scott.
I think it was relative to hype because people were hyping him up as like this breakout.
I didn't like Ozuna at all.
So yeah.
You were the high one.
Well, you both were a lot lower on him.
And by
than
that,
I was.
You mean that we liked him better?
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Well, what about this year? Any chance for a bounce back for Ozuna this year?
Oh, I think definitely. I think the 30-30 quote is pretty amusing just because he doesn't have any sort of track record as a speed guy from advanced class A forward. But, it'd be great to see that. I would certainly just take the 30 homers, and I do think he has the capability to do that.
Right now on CBSSports.com or fantasynews.cbsports.com, you can read Heath Cummings' article about American League starting pitchers and who could regress either up or down toward their mean. And Rick Porcello is one. So he named 4 starting pitchers. I'm going to list them for you. I want to know what you guys think about this group of starting pitchers, and then we will get to your emails. Rick Porcello, Heath says he'll be better this year. And it's very interesting stuff. I encourage you to read it. I won't go through all the details. Should be better this year, Rick Porcello. Marco Estrada, on the other hand, should be worse this year. It doesn't seem like he has much interest in Estrada. And then he lists a couple of aces that we can get to in a second. But let's talk Rick Porcello and Marco Estrada. Do you guys agree with Heath that Porcello will be better and Estrada will be worse?
I agree with him emphatically. In fact, with our bust and sleeper columns, that'll be coming out in the coming weeks. Porcello is on my sleeper column and Estrada on the bus column. And Estrada he had one of the lowest, if not the lowest, BABIPs in many, many years last season. And the thing that used to be really appealing about Estrada is that you figure if nothing else, he's probably going to do really, really well at WHIP. But at this point, the low BABIP is the only thing that supports that. And while I wouldn't be surprised to see him have a BABIP in the 260s next year, I don't expect to see it in the 210s, which is where it was a year ago. And who knows how many home runs he's going to give up.
Yeah, because, I mean, he gave up close to 3 per 9 before losing his job with the Brewers 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And, like, it kind of reminds me, Estrada kind of reminds me of Ricky Nolasco, where we love the strikeout to walk ratio. He's a fantasy sleeper every year and didn't quite live up to those expectations. And then finally he puts together a good year, but the strikeouts aren't there. And then what happened after that? Just a complete disaster, because he never regained that, that strikeout potential. And that's what kind of what happened with Estrada. Like, we loved that he could get strikeouts and the whip, like you said. So strikeout to walk ratio. But then last year, it's a bad strikeout rate, really, by all pitcher standards.
Not a great walk rate anymore.
Not a great walk rate. So, yeah, unless he's able to pull off the magic again. I also have him a bust for this year. I'm not quite as high as on Porcello. I know he had a strong finish. I do think he's, you know, if you want to be strict about it, yeah, he is a regression candidate. He is going to be better than last year. But I'm just not sure how good he can really be. I don't think he really has the strikeout potential to be somebody who you're going to draft in a standard mixed league and keep him on your roster all season. I could see him being like a guy who you're adding based on matchups, somebody you stream with. But beyond that, I can't really get excited about Porcello.
And I am excited, not to the extent that I'm taking a flyer on him even in the middle of a draft, but I'm sure he's going to be there late in the standard mixed draft, and he's going to be on that short list of pitchers when I'm filling out my rotation. He's somebody that I definitely want to have, because just in the event that those last eight starts that he had last year, that he can carry over what he did, and not just that he had a lower ERA and better stats, more strikeouts, better stats pretty much across the board, but a dramatic increase in a sinker movement that seemed to be tied to everything. So in the event that he really is a remade pitcher, that's somebody who could be a tremendous bargain with one of those late round picks. And I did a Twitter poll. Adam, did you see it last
week? No, I didn't. I love Twitter polls.
Yeah, I know you do. That's why I'm bringing it up. Perfect segue. So which pitcher would you rather have? And this was a discussion that started here in the office, Porcello or Rich Hill, who I also see as a guy that you could target in those late rounds.
Rich Hill for me.
And I also go Rich Hill.
And I went Porcello, although I couldn't vote because it was my own poll. Mm-hmm. But Porcello won 57% of the vote.
Mm. Porcello's the safe pick there, for sure. But I prefer, in talking about a mixed league where you have the waiver wires, your safety net, when it's all over, I like to take full advantage of that and go all out for the upside. And Rich Hill was one of only seven pitchers last year who had a back-to-back-to-back double-digit strikeout performances. Only one of seven pitchers to do that all season, and he had four starts total. So, I mean, Rich Hill has tons of upside here, and I'd rather gamble on that. Even though there's no track record, even though he could be a complete bust, I have a waiver wire to fall back on if that happens.
I wonder, I'd have to look more into this, but the AL East was so good last year, and it just leads to some bad matchups. Now, if you pitch for the Red Sox or for the Blue Jays, or I think it's basically just for the Rays, because they have to face like four really good lineups. I'm not sure about the Yankees this year, but you know, it's a big difference for me. One guy's pitching in Oakland, one guy's pitching in Boston. But I don't know. That probably matters to me more than matters to you guys.
No, it matters. I mean, look, the West might be the deepest division of any this year. I mean, all five of those teams, I think, could win the division. So I don't know that the division angle works, but it's certainly a better park for a fly ball pitcher to pitch in. Not that Porcello is not a fly ball pitcher. Hill certainly is. But a lot of good pitchers park in the AL West, and that's going to benefit Hill as a fly ball pitcher.
All right, the next two guys in Heat's column. One is Felix Hernandez, who finished as the 15th best starting pitcher in points and the 16th best in Roto. He struck out 8.5 batters per nine, which is his career rate, exactly his career rate. And you take away 2013 and 14 when Felix struck out 9.5 batters per nine. He's been right around 8.5. He's not like a dominating, overwhelming strikeout guy throughout his career, but he did have a 3.53 ERA, although he had 18 wins. He thinks that Felix Hernandez will be better this year. What do you guys think?
Yeah, and I agree with Heath on this one, too. And we actually had a discussion about it the other day. And there's just, other than the fact that there was a period where he was giving up a lot of home runs, there's no underlying factor there that suggests why he did struggle during that period and why he would continue to. So I think that that was just one of those rough stretches that pitchers go through, and he'll revert right back to the level that he set over the last several years.
And the last one's really interesting. The last one is Chris Sale, who finished as the number 10 starting pitcher in both points and Roto. And looking at his four seasons as a starter. Oh, by the way, you want to hear something kind of cool? All right, check this out. I'm going to give you the ERA over the last four seasons, starting in 2012, for both Felix Hernandez and Chris Sale. I'll give you Felix first and then Sale. All right, ready? Starting in 2012, 306, 305. 2013, 304, 307. 2014, 214, 217. 2015, 353, 341. Very weird. They've had basically the same exact four-season stretch in terms of ERA. But for Sale, did you know he has never been better than 10th at starting pitcher?
Well, there's a reason why there's a limit to how high he can go, and that's because he doesn't pitch the number of innings you'd expect from an ace. And there have always been these durability concerns with him. It's never been a major issue, so I think it's probably a little overstated. But I think the White Sox are naturally a little more protective of him than most teams are of their aces. He's never had a 220-inning season. He's never even had a 215-inning season. And I don't really see that changing. But the 341 ERA, he had such a bumpy finish last year. It was so out of character for him that I think it's pretty safe to assume the ERA is going to be better than it was last year, and he's going to be right there in the mix as top fantasy pitcher, probably outside the top five because of the innings.
Yeah, it's just weird. I was surprised that even last year, 2014, when he had a 217 ERA, it's either he doesn't get the innings, or last year was the first year he had like an unbelievable strikeout season with 274. He doesn't win a lot of games. He had 13 wins last year. For whatever reason, Sale has never been a top five starting pitcher. In fact, he's never finished higher than 10th in either format. It really surprised me, but Heath makes the case that he will have a better ERA, and 341 ERA. But I think, one of the things Heath pointed out, Al, is that Chris Sale gave up a lot of home runs. He gave up 23. This is the second time in three seasons that Sale's given up 23 home runs.
Well, yeah, and that's another reason why he just skirts outside the top pitchers. And I think that's going to continue to be a risk for him. But I do agree that he's due for a better season next year, or this year.
All right, Sale or Bumgarner?
I have Bumgarner, but, it's really close.
Yeah. In fact, I'm pretty sure I've got Sale ahead, but I don't.
You have Sale higher than I do. You have Sale in your top five, I think.
Yeah.
And I have him barely in my top ten. So.
You guys both have him seventh.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
In which format?
I'm looking at points.
Okay, sorry. I thought I had him higher.
And in Roto, you both have him seventh.
All right. The consistency.
There you go. All right, let's read some emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. This is Jay from New York. Dear Sean, Roger, and Daniel.
007.
Did anybody see the new Bond movie?
I have not.
I have not seen a single Bond movie, so.
Oh, right. That's
new one among them.
I haven't seen it either. What's your take on Stephen Piscotty this year in a 6x6 auction, 14-team roto? I can keep Piscotty for $4. What do you think about him in a 14-team roto?
Sounds good to me.
It sounds great.
What do I think of him in general? I'm still a little iffy on the power production, especially. And, the fact he struck out so much more than I'd hoped he would. That gives me some questions about his batting average, too. But I think there's any outfielder you'd consider taking in the middle rounds is going to cause some concern in you. And Piscotty was so productive despite, not quite meeting my expectations in certain areas that, I think he's worth a shot at that point. $4 is more like a late round pick anyway. So that's a good bar. That's a good price for him.
All right. Who would you rather have, Piscotty or Denard Span?
Piscotty.
Definitely Piscotty.
EJ in Austin, Texas is in a 12-team mixed league considering switching to some kind of keeper format for this year. I've never played in a keeper league before. What are your recommendations for a keeper format? How many players should we keep? What's the best way to regulate draft picks for keepers in subsequent years? Al, what do you think?
Yeah, and no, I love the keeper format, so I think that's definitely an upgrade. I think at least initially, maybe you can ratchet it up over time, but maybe have limited keepers, like I think five or six is a good number, maybe, because you maintain you know, a core and identity for your team, but you know, give people a chance to sort of adapt to the format. And then in terms of regulating the picks for keepers in subsequent years, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to go about that, but you know, I think probably the simplest thing is just to just have that player be at the value at which they were last drafted.
All right, next email is from Chris in the ICT. We know Chris very well. Gray the trade. Dear Haas, Moose, and Salvi.
Sounds like a Royals fan.
Yeah, it sure does. I have too many keepers in my 12-team points league with 30-man rosters. All right, so like he's got really, really, really good keepers. So since he had too many, he gave up Jose Bautista, Steven Strasburg, and Johnny Cueto for Mike Trout. What do you think? This is a 12-team points league, 30-man rosters, but he still has... Now he would have Trout, Goldschmidt, Stanton, Arenado, Correa, Abreu, Bumgarner, and Kluber.
I mean, you can't really fault him for that. It's obviously a lopsided trade, but given the rules, it makes sense that he'd rather than dump two deserving keepers, he'd just package them with a third for an even better keeper. But this is kind of why, like, I really don't like off-season trading in keeper leagues, and unless there's rules that are carefully constructed to avoid this sort of thing, because I mean, if you happen to stumble upon a few of the big breakouts that year, you can just do this and suddenly build this super team of, you know, super high-end players that nobody can really take down and nobody can break up because it's a keeper league. It just, to me, it ends up being unfair, because if you just let all those players go and everybody just started with eight on equal footing, then you would avoid this situation where there's this cumulative effect of hoarding the best keepers in the league. Mm.
Interesting. Scott is calling Chris from the ICT a dirty cheater.
No, he's following the rules. He's doing what he should do based on the way his league set them up.
I
don't think it's great to have that be an option.
What round did Cueto go in our mock? Do you remember, or do you have a quick way to define
that?
Yeah,
I can find that. I got it pulled up here. He went in round six.
Oh, okay. Man. You know, I was going to beat you to it.
This is an eight-keeper league. If Cueto is borderline droppable, and I think he may be in an eight-keeper league, I don't even think it's that lopsided.
So the trade was Bautista, Strasburg, and Cueto for Trout. Yeah, if it were like...
It's lopsided, but not as much as I made it sound like.
All right.
But for an in-season trade, that's clearly super lopsided.
I just don't think... If every team is out to keep its best players, I don't think anybody should be trading Trout, period, this time of year. Like, that should never happen. And obviously, Chris, I can understand why both teams did it in this scenario, but that seems like a problem with the rules to me.
How does he lose? I mean, Trout, Goldschmidt, Stanton, Arenado, Correa, Abreu, Bumgarner, and Kluber.
Yeah.
How do you lose? That is amazing. Cody in Washington. Last year was my first year playing fantasy baseball, and with your expert advice, I was one of the better teams in my league and helped impress my future father-in-law.
Ooh, wow.
In our 10-team head-to-head points league, 8 teams make the playoffs. I'm thinking about going very, very hitter-heavy early because of how volatile starting pitching can be at the end of the year with skip starts, innings limits, and injuries. My plan is to load up on high upside pitchers in the middle to late rounds, round 8 and after, and build my staff with pickups throughout the years. Is this a good strategy, or do you have any other advice for leagues that practically guarantee a playoff spot?
For a 10-team league, I like this a lot. I would just be sure to get one bona fide ace in there. I think you need that even in a 10-team league. But I think not only in terms of avoiding the kinds of risks that Cody pointed out, that you could get a lot of really good waiver options throughout the season in a 10-team league.
At pitcher?
At pitcher.
Yeah, I guess you can. I mean, this used to be the approach I always took. I'm a little emphatic about it now, just because I feel like there's such a large group of aces now that you can't get by with waiver scraps when everyone else has two or three of these super studs they're relying on every week. I realize I keep using the super modifier in everything I'm saying, but it becomes a matter of keeping up with the competition. And if you're the only one going with this, you know, patchwork rotation, and the caliber of what would be a not patchwork rotation is so much higher than it used to be, it's going to be harder to keep up. So I would go two aces. Al's saying one, I would do two. And then beyond that, you can mix and match to your heart's content.
I also think that 80% of the teams make the playoffs. You should try to be the one who reaches for Michael Brantley, maybe Albert Pujols. You don't need them immediately. And then when everybody gets healthy, stud time.
Well, not reaching. I mean, that defeats the purpose, reaching. I get
no,
what you're saying.
You should
be the one who takes them at their discounted price.
But you can't. But you have to reach a little bit earlier. I don't want you to reach for anyone, but maybe a round or something, because it's worth it in this format. The downside to drafting them is you might not make the playoffs because they're out for however long they're out. But everybody makes the playoffs. Eight out of ten teams make the playoffs. You know what I mean?
Sure.
All right. Anyway, here's Scott in Boston. He wants us to grade his trade. You get an F because he says he switched from Team Trout to Team Harper.
Oh,
A plus.
You get an F from me. but anyway, 12-team, 5x5 roto league. The whole league is now debating this trade. You Uh-oh. Keep six. There's a 2-round penalty each year you keep them. I gave up Trout in the 16th round and Kipnis in the 4th for Harper in the 12th and Billy Hamilton in the 11th. So Trout with a 16-round value and Kipnis in the 4th round. He gave that up to get Harper in the 12th round and Billy Hamilton in the 11th. Grade the trade.
I'm hovering around to see.
You're doing what now?
I'm hovering around to see. I'm trying to figure out where to go from there.
Yeah, it's not a bad trade.
I feel like this is pretty balanced trade. I think it makes sense on both sides. Obviously, Trout at 16 is better value than Harper and 14, but they're both such a good value. It almost doesn't matter the exact round to me.
Harper and 12.
Yeah, sorry. No 16 problem. For Trout versus 12 for Harper.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, for taking that downgrade in round, you get Hamilton in the 11th, which in a roto league seems like a better keeper than Kipnis in the 4th. I mean, neither is great, but if I had to give up my 4th round pick to keep Kipnis, I'm probably not keeping Kipnis, you know?
Right. I'll go C-plus here, and it's really Kipnis in the 4th that pushes it above the C, even C, because that's not very good value at all.
All right, a couple more. Evan from St. Louis. Dear Mike, Bryce, and Paul.
All right, top three
Big
picks.
Three.
Yeah, that's right. In that order, probably.
Ah, yes.
We're doing really well with the green.
He gets an A from you.
Happy New Year. Hope you guys had a great holiday. Before I ask you about my keepers, can you tell me when you start recruiting for the podcast league? I'm hoping to join this year.
Today. No, not really. It's going to be a while, right? March?
It's going to be a while, yes. Yeah. Chillax. What I'll do is I'll say we have picked a date and time. This is when we're doing the podcast league draft, and then I will ask you to submit for your entry. And you know, I used to just say let's get a league, and then I tried to get a draft time together, and it was impossible to get like 12 strange. Well, I guess it's the four of us and like 8 strangers. So I'll give you the announced time ahead of time. Anyway, for the draft. Okay. Anyway, here's the question. he needs help choosing keepers. It's a 6x6, 16-team head-to-head categories league with OPS. Pick 4 keepers.
Okay, 4.
So he's already going to keep Correa and McCutcheon, so now we need 2.
Okay. Two keepers.
Matt Carpenter, who's eligible at second base.
Uh-huh.
Adam Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Mookie Betts. Mm. Miguel Sano. Carlos Gonzalez. Matt Harvey. Steven Strasburg. Again, we need two out of a second base eligible Matt Carpenter, Adam Jones, Mookie Betts, Miguel Sano, Carlos Gonzalez, Matt Harvey, and Steven Strasburg.
Mookie?
I'm going Sano. I'm definitely not going Mookie. I'm going Sano and one of the two pitchers.
Sano? As one of four keepers?
Yeah.
You like him that high?
I do. Maybe. Not necessarily for 2016, but for the long haul, yeah.
I think Mookie could win AL MVP this year. So,
that's what I said.
And he's a gosh, is he a second? No, I guess he's a third rounder for me in a 12 team league. So four keepers in a 16 team league. I'm definitely keeping Mookie. That's the easy one. Probably Harvey is the second one.
Yeah, really tough for me to pick between Harvey and Strasburg.
Yeah.
Just to be difficult, I'll say Strasburg.
Okay. Adam from Chicago. Here's a great problem to have. I need to choose two keepers for 2016. My top two guys are Trout and Harper. They seem like obvious choices, but it feels strange to me keeping two guys in a position as deep as outfield. Should I keep both Trout and Harper or swap one of them out for Carlos Correa, Manny Machado, or Max Scherzer? This is a 12-team head-to-head points league.
No.
No. But Manny Machado and Correa are both first-rounders also, so it's like, I don't think you could be that wrong by if you did do that, but at the same time, there's no way you give up Trout or Harper.
Yeah.
So, no.
Can't do it. Well, that's it for our show today. Thank you so much for emailing everybody. We'll continue to take them. We'll be back next week. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com, and we'll read as many as we can to get you help throughout the offseason. Guys, thank you. It's been fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun for me,
as
too.
As usual.
Scott White, Al Melchior. I'm Adam Azer. Go Mike Trout. See you later. We'll be right back.